I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
There are horror stories and horror stories, elements of terror that take myriad forms. But this item has a built-in terror which can refrigerate even the most dispassionate amongst us. It has to do with a little beastie known as an earwig, a small bug that crawls into the human ear. And while inside, it doesn't whisper sweet nothings. It performs quite another function. Offered to you now on Night Gallery, a brand new nightmare which we call the Caterpillar.
We're back again with directors Guillermo del Toro and Jeannot Swarck honoring Rod Serling's Night Gallery right here on the TV Time Machine.
I think that Rod Serling was interested in the ideas and Jack Laird was interested in the mystery.
Yes.
And the mood. Also, Jack Laird, you know, he was a hermit. He had this huge sign on his door that said, "No, don't come in. I'm not interested. Leave me alone." Basically, he liked to write and to work with writers, but he was a very well-read man, and a lot of those short stories, you know, he found, I mean, he knew about. He also had an extensive collection of silent films, and he was a big jazz buff. So that gives you an idea of what an eclectic and kind of complex personality.
But did you stay in contact with him at all?
I beg your pardon?
Did you stay in contact with him?
I stayed in contact with him for quite a while after that, after Night Gallery, and Gerald Friedman did too, I think. You know, he was complex. He drank a bit too much. He had I don't know how many ex-wives, and then he ran into money problems, and then, of course, he had very bad health problems because he was a diabetic, and I think they had to cut off one of his feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, but he still had the power of the pen, because I remember at Universal, even after Night Gallery, whenever they had a pilot that was in trouble, they'd give him to him on Friday afternoon, and Monday morning they'd have a scintillating rewrite.
Which of the episodes, when people approach you, is the one they remember the most? Obviously, Caterpillar, I imagine?
Guillermo, I must tell you, you're absolutely right. It always stuns me, but everybody mentions Caterpillar.
It's the one episode that I, if I remember correctly, Stephen King singles out in his book Dance Macabre.
That's correct.
As the one that he thinks lives in infamy in the memory of everybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody, you know, it's such a great legend, and nobody ever
sleeps
peacefully. It's sort of the jaws of the insect world.
Well, that's true, Guillermo. Did you experience this at your school? I remember at the time when that episode aired, everybody the next day was paranoid at my elementary school of earwigs.
Yeah, because in Mexico they're very common, earwigs.
Yeah.
Very, very common. I think in France they call them little scissors, right?
Yeah, that's
yes,
right.
Which correct.
Is the same in Mexico. We call them little scissors. And I remember as a kid, before going to bed, I checked under my pillow, under my bed. I tell you, it's the jaws of the insect world, because it's the same thing happened to me with jaws. I mm-hmm. used to love the ocean and diving, and I've never been able to dive after jaws without thinking a shark is going to appear looming in the water. And I think the caterpillar has the same effect, and it has somewhat, obviously has a legacy of moments like the, you know, Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan, mm-hmm. where they essentially take it. And I'm helping a friend with a movie, and he's having a caterpillar moment with an insect going into the ear of a person, and it's truly quite a you hit a social nerve there.
Oh, thank you very much. But you know who I think deserves a lot of credit for that? The power of that show is John Williams.
Yes.
No, and I wanted him because of Hitchcock, yeah. of course, but the way he says that last line,
mm-hmm. yes,
because he says it in such a quiet way, I think that's why it resonates.
But I think Lawrence Harvey, two things stand out when I watch the episode. Your camera work, which is one of the most sedate and classic of the series. And by sedate, I don't mean lethargic. I mean truly serene.
Oh, that's
serene.
All right. I took
truly serene. And the camera work seems to have more play, is more playful with the shadows. And Lawrence Harvey's feverish performance is quite astounding to him.
Guillermo, by sedate, do you also mean unobtrusive? Because I think, Jeannot, you kind of have that philosophy, sort of the John Ford philosophy, where you really don't notice the camera.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must say that I'm not crazy about films where the camera runs around biting everybody's legs like a wild puppy. No, I like camera moves, and I will do things where I'm moving the camera constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But it all has to do with the mood and the story. And to me, a good film, they should be a little bit seamless.
Let me ask you, if you don't mind, about that episode also. Another notable thing is the music, which has this percussion, disturbing, insecty-like percussion instrument. When you did the episodes in Night Gallery, what was your relationship with the musicians? Each director could have their input, or did they go another route and work with the producers?
Well, they mostly work with the producers, but because I did so many Night Galleries, I had kind of input. And I remember, I didn't give details, but I remember I wanted something that was kind of out of the ordinary and bizarre a little bit and not too obtrusive. That is the one thing I remember. But it was mostly Jack Laird, who, by the way, was a very good, amateur musician.
And that's the other area where I think the personalities of Night Gallery and Twilight Zone differ. Twilight Zone had these sweeping, beautiful scores, sometimes done by people as brilliant as Bernard Herrmann. But Night Gallery have a much more quirky, certainly much more modern slant, using electronic music and using really eclectic instrumentation, like in the case of the Caterpillar, where it seems to be using Asian.
There was an Asian influence, and I think some electronic. And by the way, I think the one who did most of the music of Night Gallery was a friend of Jack Laird. So it was a lot of Jack's input.
Right. Eddie Sauter did the score for
The
Caterpillar, and I think it's his best score for the series. And I think that's one of the reasons why the third season of Night Gallery suffered, because Eddie Sauter became basically the house composer for that season, and you didn't have the variety of scores along with a variety of stories because you were pigeonholed into one half-hour episode every week.
He also did the score for Brenda, I think, no?
Correct.
And, which is another salient piece of scoring.
Yeah,
Well, Guillermo, you really know Night Gallery. My God,
he does.
what is beautiful about these musicians is that they, as you said, come from the jazz world in a way. Mm-hmm. And that is another imprimatur that can be traced back to Jack Laird.
Yes, absolutely, because Jack had a huge jazz collection.
And he probably was friend with these musicians. I mean, Gilles Méliès, the writing of the main theme is so brilliant.
Well, that was
a very good friend of Jack.
Right, and that was very revolutionary, and Jack actually stuck his neck out on that one, too, bringing in Gilles Méliès to compose the first electronic score ever for a TV series.
And it's, I think, one of the most memorable ever, too.
He deserves a lot of credit. In a way, I'm happy that, we're singing his praises, because it didn't happen when it should have happened, and part of it was because he had such a bizarre personality, but his talent inspired a lot of loyalty. I felt very loyal towards him in Night Gallery. I know Gil did the same way, and Gene Carney and Jerry, and so he had something. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Guillermo, what episodes of Night Gallery, with children being at the center of the story, stand out for you?
Without a doubt, Messiah and Moth on Moth Street, which is a remarkable. Brenda, which has that ambivalent erotic and sort of sexual subtext, you know, and the coming of age
right.
story. And one theme that is common to all kids' story, which is being bad, being the outcast. Right. Another one that comes to mind is Silence No, Secrets No. You know, which is
I love that. I'd love that.
And it's quintessential sort of literature and film for about the outcast child. You know, those are the ones that I think come to mind more prominently. But obviously, there were children in other episodes, more notably The Doll. You know, which is the episode that made me lose control. but I think that this is something that. Was interesting to watch also from both Jack Laird and Rod Serling, their approach to childhood.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the approach childhood has in Twilight Zone and Night Gallery, Serling loves to posit the extremes, the older people and the young kids, people that are outcasts by their age in society. But Laird seems to be interested in it in a different way. You know, in the sense of the more diseased, more infirm psychologically effects of childhood. Not so much the social commentary of the outcast, as in Mott Street,
mm-hmm.
but the outcast socially and psychologically, as in Brenda or Silence No. So this is where I think the power of the mixture of the two men comes together.
Tune in next week for part two of directors Guillermo del Toro and Jeannot's work honoring Rod Serling's Night Gallery right here on the TV Time Machine.